Welcome back to the UFO Files, and it's a pleasure to talk to a San Francisco Bay Area reporter and talk show host, too, as well as Echoes, Leslie Kane. How are you?
Very good. Glad to be with you.
Welcome to the Jerry Pippin Show, Leslie.
Great to be here.
And, you know, I've been looking forward to talking to you because reporters, and basically that's what you were before you ever got interested in UFOs, correct?
That's correct.
You know, they have a mixed bag when it comes to talking about UFO issues. In fact, some of them are downright skeptical or don't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole, as they say.
Right. Well, that's how most journalists are. They either won't touch it or they ridicule it, unfortunately. And I don't happen to think that that's legitimate. I mean, I think that this issue is worthy of serious investigation as a journalist, like I would cover anything else. And I wish that more journalists had that approach as well. But unfortunately, I think people have been conditioned, you know, by the culture, by the National Enquirer, and by whatever other forces are at play to make people think that this is a joke. But I don't believe it is.
I want to find out, before we get too deep into this interview, what was the event that got you interested in UFOs?
Well, I've had kind of a personal interest in them ever since the 80s, and it was actually when I first read Whitley Strieber's book when it first came out, Communion, and that really piqued my interest, and it was always just sort of peripheral, personal, you know. And then after practicing journalism for a number of years and doing the radio program and publishing in many different places on many different subjects, you know, this report came out of France, which I wrote my first article about in the Boston Globe, called the Cometa Report, and it was just so extraordinary. It was because, and we can go into that a little bit if you'd like, but
yes,
just to answer your question, this particular report came out, and as a journalist, someone brought it to my attention, and I could recognize that this was, if anything was ever going to make it into the mainstream media, this was it, because of the nature of this report. And I just decided, you know, I'm well established enough now that maybe some of the editors who I'm familiar with would be willing to accept something on this, and it's something I just have a deep interest in. So I sort of took the opportunity, and if this report had never come out, you know, I don't know what would have happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us, can you give a little thumbnail sketch about what that report's all about?
Yeah, it came out in the summer of 99 in France, and it was a three-year study that was made by some extremely significant, highly credible people in France, such as a four-star general who was the former commander of the French Tactical Air Force. He was a military advisor to the prime minister, a three-star admiral, the former head of the equivalent of NASA in France, the national chief of police, you know, these kinds of people, scientists. It was a group of about 13 people. And, you know, you can imagine if the equivalent people did something on UFOs in the United States. We're talking, you know, joint chiefs of staff level. Most of them were retired, however. But they have a significant clout. And so anyway, they did this three-year study. They looked at data from military and government sources from around the world. They studied a lot of cases of pilots and all official sources that they used. And they came to the determination that about 5% of all of the UFO sightings seemed to be, you know, they said that they're most likely to be extraterrestrial because they explored all the different hypotheses. And they deducted that is the most logical hypothesis. It doesn't prove that that's what they are, but because of the evidence that they were able to gather, you know, which specifically pointed to this 5%, which were sightings in which there was a lot of information about them. They didn't even include the ones that were not well documented, but these were well documented sightings in which there was a lot of evidence that really couldn't be explained any other way. And so they wrote this 90-page study, and it looked at the whole phenomena and explained why they came to this conclusion. And then they proposed that this be taken up in the international arena, that the European Union should get involved, and that all the countries of the world should get together and do a study. And they were very concerned about it from a national defense perspective also, you know, whether there are national security implications of the phenomena. And they also dealt with the U.S., particularly addressed the U.S. denial of the reality of the phenomena and, you know, express their concern about the secrecy that goes on in the United States. So it was to me, that's an incredible conclusion for a group like this to draw.
Yes.
And that's why I thought it was newsworthy.
And so you got the story out of France. It was printed in the Boston Globe, and you're in the Bay Area.
Yes, I mean, but I've written for the Boston Globe about five or six times before, in the, mm-hmm. for the same editor that was willing to take the chance to write this article, and it was really hard to get it published. And this was a very open-minded person. I mean, when I describe it to you, it probably doesn't sound like very unreasonable that somebody would want to publish an article about this, but at the time that I did it, it was...
Oh, I think things have changed drastically even in the last two or three years.
You know, in reflecting on this, I think you might be right. I don't think it'd be as hard for me to do something like this now. But boy, was it hard. And, you know, people were laughing at me when I meant, you know, and I tried not to even use the word UFO when I pitched the story, but I meant to many, many places who had published my work before and been receptive, and they just would hang up on me. But this editor, of course, was willing to work with me on it, but she was nervous. And a couple of times she decided to back out, and she said, "We're not going to do it. It's too much. You know, I can't handle it."
Uh-huh.
And then I'd come back to her a week later and make some little change in the story that you know,
sure,
made her feel better. So there was a lot of back and forth. And for me, the most important point was not to have even an ounce of ridicule in the story. And she had a tendency to want to put it in there because that's what people, that's how people think about this issue.
Yeah, in fact, it's almost like they feel obliged to put that in the third or fourth paragraph, you know.
And I think they do partly to cover themselves because
sure.
they want to let the world know that, yeah, we realize that this is silly, but, you know, they have to let everybody know that we mm-hmm. understand this is silly, but we're going to write about it anyway, but you don't have to fault us for it because...
Well, I've noticed a lot of things happening this year that maybe you'll take it out of that silly department. We all know all of the hoopla built around the Sci-Fi Channel and their miniseries and all of that. And now we got this news out of Washington about John Podesta, the former White House chief of staff under President Bill Clinton.
Right.
And his public relations firm, evidently, they're really going to make a serious effort. Do you know much about that?
Yes, well, I've actually been working very closely with them on all of that. And I participated in the press conference with John Podesta and presented a paper that I had been commissioned to write for that press conference by the Sci-Fi Channel. So I'm very happy with the way that the Sci-Fi Channel has been putting resources into some serious activities that have been going on in Washington. And I'm very happy to be part of it as well.
We're talking with Leslie Kane, a reporter and talk show host on the Pacifica Foundation's station there in Berkeley. What's the call?
It's KPFA.
And then it seems like that's 88 or 89 on
the dial. 94.1.
Well, I was close. You have to dial over quite a ways to get to 94. Okay. Anyway, what time does your show come on?
It comes on at 5 p.m. California time.
Uh-huh. Oh, good. Afternoon drive.
Yeah, it's a drive time news program.
And basically, do you deal with issues of the day, or is it more investigative reporting, or what?
Yeah, it's kind of both. It's definitely news driven. We work mainly around things that are happening, but occasionally we'll do sort of in-depth pieces that aren't as time sensitive. You know, where we'll speak with authors about books they've written and so on. But they're pretty much focused around what's going on now in the world. So it's a high pressure job.
Mm-hmm. Now this. This thing with Podesta and that group, is that called the Coalition for Freedom of Information? Or?
Yeah, we actually, in cooperation with, myself and the Ed Rothschild, who is the works with Podesta Mattoon, the public relations firm
uh-huh.
that you just mentioned,
sure.
and Larry Lantzman, who is with the Sci-Fi Channel, we formed this coalition a few months ago for the purpose of trying to promote more scientific investigation into the subject, to try to encourage media to take it more seriously, and also to try to get information from the government released for the benefit of the public. And I'm very involved with an action that we're sponsoring, a freedom of information request to obtain information about an incident that happened in 1965, which was the crash of an object in Keswick, Pennsylvania. So a lot of what the Coalition for Freedom of Information is focused on right now is that effort.
Leslie, you know you piqued my interest there by throwing that out. I've got to find out what happened in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it's a fascinating case. And it has been well-researched by an individual named Stan Gordon, who has been on lots of radio shows. I think he may have even been a guest on your program
mm-hmm.
in the past. And it was an object that came down in 1965, there were lots of witnesses. What's extraordinary about it is there were so many witnesses, and many of them are alive today. and the military came in, they cordoned off the area, they tried to keep people away, and the government basically claims that nothing fell in Kecksburg. But that doesn't jive with what the people that were on the scene have said. And so we want to find out what happened there, and we're not going to assume anything in advance, mm-hmm. that we know what it is and make any suppositions about it, but we'd like to know why it was so highly secretive, why they're not telling us the truth about the fact that something even came down at all.
Where is Kecksburg, Pennsylvania?
It's just outside of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
It's a tiny little town. It's near Greensburg, Pennsylvania. It's probably about a 45-minute drive from Pittsburgh.
And this happened in 65. That was a year before the Freedom of Information Act came into being, I think.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I think it was sometime in the 60s that you're right.
I think it was 66. And now you got this thing going on with this war on terrorism and all these bills. They're trying to limit the Freedom of Information access even more.
That's right. And we're really up against a lot, aren't we?
Yeah.
In fact, Ashcroft had come out with this statement. It was reported in the Washington Post recently that he, has encouraged the offices, the officials who deal with freedom of information, to feel free to withhold information as much as they want, and basically told them that he'll support them doing that, giving them kind of a green light to violate the Freedom of Information Act. So that is all, of course, around this so-called war on terrorism. So you're right, we are fighting a very hard battle here. But what's wonderful is that the Sci-Fi Channel has provided the resources for us to hire a law firm in Washington, who has had a lot of experience with dealing with FOIA requests, and we're determined to fight this. But, you know, and that what's exciting to me is that investigators on their own can only go so far in fighting the government for information, because they don't have the resources, they don't have the clout of a law firm and the money that it takes to fight a battle like this. And so what's exciting here is that we have the resources now to really go for this in a way that I haven't been able to be done before. We'll see what happens.
In my opinion about Washington politics is who you know is and who's in on some story is just as important as maybe the information. And so you have some big names this time around.
We have John Podesta, which is very exciting for us. And he, as people probably know, he was Clinton's chief of staff, President Clinton's chief of staff, and he was very instrumental in some reforms that were made to the Freedom of Information Act during Clinton's administration, in which 800 million pages of documents were declassified. And he's a man of high integrity who believes in the people's right to information. And he's been willing to come forward specifically on the UFO issue and make the statement that people have a right to this information, and they're specifically around the requests that we're making on the Kecksburg case, since, you know, it's old enough now. It happened more than 25 years ago, which is sort of the cutoff point. They're supposed to release documents that are older than 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of like the official secrets law over in England. It's supposed to be 50 years, but who knows?
Boy, that's a long time.
Yeah, right.
But John Podesta has been very, he's very exciting for us that he's supporting this initiative, and it was, of course, of great interest to the press when he came out of this press conference with us. So we're excited about it.
Well, now tell me, Are you working on something that's very recent, or is most of this the old material now that you think you have a chance to really bring forward?
Well,
I mean that's a heck of a question, but what I mean by that is, mm-hmm. I'm just trying to get a feel, Leslie Kane, on what's most important to you in bringing out the story.
You mean in particularly with the Kecksburg request?
Or any of these requests. I mean, is there something that we can be looking for that you're working on? I mean, I don't expect you to give away your exclusives here, but I mean, is there something let me phrase it this way. Is there something shocking or surprising, very surprising, that you've come across recently?
Well, let me just think about that. Shocking. I'm continuously shocked and surprised at stuff that I read on UFOs, and that includes documents that are decades and decades and decades old that come out of the U.S. government. I love the documents from the 40s and 50s. I was, fascinated to learn. I mean, there's so much. And in terms of what I've got going in the future, that, you know, a lot of my focus for future work is the Keksberg request that I just mentioned to you, and it's, there's a lot of work involved because I have to research it and then figure out where to send the letters and what to ask for specifically.
Yeah, on that freedom of information, that's the big hang-up, isn't it? If you don't ask for it specifically, you don't get it.
That's right.
You and if you do ask for it specifically, usually it's blacked out, but at least you get something.
Exactly, and you really have to know who to go to and how to request it, you know, and I have lots of very knowledgeable people that I'm able to consult with about it. And then the other thing I do is I try to write regular stories, and I did just publish a story actually last week. It was an op-ed piece about our Freedom of Information Act request. So that's sort of what I'm coming off of right now.
You know, I think this administration has set back the Freedom of Information request 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you feel about
it. No, I agree with you completely. I mean, this administration does not have respect for the people's right to information. I would thoroughly agree with you on that, and I just hope that we won't have a repeat of this in 2 years, you know?
Yeah.
We're just kind of waiting it out.
Well, for some reason, a lot of people, and I've always been amazed at this, and you're a reporter, you know, sometimes you get into a little hairy story, a little personal story or something, and you actually find a good percentage of people say, well, I didn't need to know that, you know, that type thing. Mm-hmm. I don't quite understand that sometimes, that type of thinking, but...
You mean where people think that they're not interested in the information?
Yeah. Well, they're interested, but they'll say, "Well, why do you have to know that?" In other words, what I'm saying is, I don't always think the people are looking out for the people's interest.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be manipulated by hot button issues that get, you know, flag waving, things like that, and they forget about some of the really important things in
right.
a democracy. And if it's not for reporters and people who can tell the truth, untethered by and that's getting harder to find anymore. In my opinion, it just doesn't seem like people are after the truth like they used to.
Well, Jerry, I have to agree with you on that, unfortunately. And I think a lot of the problem, too, is that the media is increasingly controlled by corporations, and the media is being, you know, there's less diversity in terms of who runs it and who owns it.
Mm-hmm.
And reporters just seem to be more concerned about their jobs than they are about really getting the information.
And of course,
they jump on the patriotism bandwagon a lot, too.
Well, Dan Rather recently made a speech about that. And
yeah,
self-censorship,
right.
And he's absolutely right.
I think
people are being manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a lot of people that are being manipulated, know they're being manipulated, and they don't do anything about it. And part of the problem probably is that I was told a long time ago by a boss, an unscrupulous type boss, that if you pay everybody just a little more than they're worth, you got them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
what's happened to especially television reporters.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you entirely, Jerry. I really do. And, you know, you ask about what's shocking to me. I mean, from what I described earlier about this group in France, to me it is shocking, and I don't mean necessarily in a negative way. It's just extraordinary to me that a group of that level would come out with a statement saying that 5% of UFO sightings seem to be extraterrestrial. I mean, there has never been a report like that has come out by such people. And it got no coverage in this country except for my story, which I had to push for months and months to even get one piece out on it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that's news?
Well, sure it is.
And I'm shocked. I mean, I think it's just extraordinary that they even drew that conclusion and that the world is not in awe of that conclusion.
Yeah, we're talking with Leslie Kane. She's on the phone from the Bay Area. She has a talk show with the Pacifica Foundation FM station. And